This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Sandy Booth at New Forest Fruit. How are you, Sandy?
Yeah, good. You?
Yeah, very good, very good. I just cruised down from London and it's a two-hour journey or hour and a half journey.
Yeah, it's a bit of a journey.
It's not too bad. There was a bit of roadworks, but it was all right. I got here and we're going to be talking to you about UK wines in polytunnels.
Yes, yes we are.
Before we get into that, you're in New Forest and yes. your business was mainly strawberries, wasn't it?
Yeah, I came into this business in 2008. I was a farm manager here in 97 to 2000. I went back to Scotland for 8 years and then got married, kids, all that usual, and then ended up coming back south again as a business partner here. And since then, my business partner's left. I now own the whole business, but we are predominantly a strawberry business. We do about 5,000 tonnes of strawberries a year. We do about 100 tonnes of asparagus a year, and then we do a little bit of blueberries and a little bit of raspberries, and now the newest project is growing vines in tunnels.
Nice. So you've been starting planting up vines, but you took over a vineyard beforehand, and your branding comes from that vineyard as well.
Yes. So I'm a tenant farmer on the Bewley estate here in the New Forest, and back in 2019, the owner of the estate said, would you mind looking after the vineyard for us? Because we have no one to look after it. They could see what I was doing with the growing of the strawberries, etc., and asparagus. I wasn't sure at the beginning, but I am now. We took on the challenge back then. And I've since changed that vineyard over from what was 4 metre spacing by 2 metre spacing of Bacchus to planting 2.2 by 1.1s with new Bacchus vineyard. Grown in our own unique way, which is with our waste coir from the strawberries and growing it in a bed system to act like a solar panel at the bottom end of the root zone to being outdoors on that field. But that's what intrigued me back in 2020. A year moved on and we decided that we'd have a go at growing some vines in tunnels.
When you replanted it, did you put it in tunnels or did you do it what you do in strawberries?
Yeah, first of all, we planted into the field with no tunnels, which led me to a little area that we had spare from the asparagus field that I thought, oh, this would be a great experiment to just plant some reds and Gewurztraminer, just to see if we could get them to grow in the UK in tunnels. And the story goes from there, really. So 21 was when we first planted the first vines into tunnels. And so we took our first harvest in 23. And the story goes on now, and they are growing really well now. And we have worked out a few things that needs to be done along the way to make sure we get the right quality of the grapes. And that's down to knowing how many bunches of grapes need to be on per variety, because we've grown some of them with too much on them, and they've come to fruition in the end, but it's been a lot of hard work. So we now know the optimum kilos that we need from each vine and each variety to have the optimum results.
Yeah, you've brought in experts, you've got a winemaker, and you've got
we have a local guy, Guillaume Lager, who helps me with the blending of the wines and advice on the growing. And we have Penny Meadmore from Agrivista, who signs all the dots off and crosses the T's in the technical side of things to make sure that we're not breaking any rules. But basically, it's down to how we are growing things here already that I'm adapting to how we grow vines. And what I mean by that is, for example, our asparagus has no chemicals applied to it at all. In the way we grow it, so we're trying to adopt that over into the vines as well, and we're slowly getting there. We were at 10-day spraying with chemicals, now we're at 3 weeks, and we're hoping this year that actually some of them we will just spray with no chemicals at all and just use what we call nutritional sprays to enhance the calcium or the potassium or enhance the bacteria or fungi that's growing in the root zone to make the plants at their optimum, basically, for the growing season.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite impressed, actually, with what you're doing. I can see you're trying to take your strawberry knowledge and apply it to wine without, don't take this the wrong way, but I mean, you don't have a deep wine technical knowledge. So you're actually coming at it probably from quite left field, and it's going to take you a year or two to get it perfected, but it looks like you're doing a really good job of doing something quite different in a way that a normal wine company just wouldn't even think about it.
I keep saying we're on the beginning of our journey. I completely agree that I'm very green at this. I think is the right phrase. I'm the newbie on the block, shall we say, but it's just a fascinating industry, really, and it's the same with everything. It's like when we started in asparagus, growing it in tunnels 7 years ago now, everybody poo-pooed us for growing asparagus in tunnels, and that's not the way it's done, and that's not the way it should be. And so it's a bit like the wine now. Yes, there's a lot of people out there that are going, why? And basically, what I'm saying to them is, what we're trying to do is get to a point where there'll be no chemicals at all. And I know some people have gone out there organically, that's the way we do it anyway. But the point with this is to go, there's no risk with this, that we have a constant yield every year. Not some years are good, some years are bad. My aim is that we have a consistency that is not only with yield, but with the wine itself. That's the target, really, to home in on what I call ATD, attention to detail. And it's about fine-tuning everything that we do with the vines to a point where we've kept the costs as low as we can, even if they're in tunnels. But the uniqueness of the tunnels goes back to when strawberries first came into tunnels, which is back in 98, when we were picking 4 to 6 tons an acre to now picking 10 to 20 tons an acre. So there's a yield gain from a plant that's healthy and you're in control of. If you can do that, then you're in control of that yield and that quality of wine. And that's what we're on the journey of. And some of the varieties that we're growing now might not be growing in 5 years' time, because we'll have found the varieties that really work well in the area we're in and within the tunnels. And we're still fine-tuning all of that, as of today. I've just shown you the latest planting, which is Nobilio. And you're not the first one to tell me that's brave, but
no,
I'm so green that I will give anything a go.
No, I'm not worried about Nebbiolo. I think that's got a chance. It was the Grenache that I thought was brave.
Well, yeah. So we had our first little crop of that last year, and that's in our rosé for 24. At the moment, they're looking really good.
Tell us the grape varieties you're trialling. Just give us an idea of what they are.
So in 21, we planted Gewurztraminer. We planted Merlot. We planted Shiraz. We planted Cab Franc, Cab Jura, and Pinotin.
So Cab Jura and Pinotin are Peewee wines. Some of the listeners may.
Yeah, they're not as well known, to be honest. But they are the newbies on the block, shall we say? Keep using that word. I shouldn't be using that word. So, the newbies on the block, and they are hybrids, so they don't get diseases easily, but they offer something different to the end result. So that's why they are quite interesting varieties for the future. So these are the ones we planted in 21. And the way we do it now is that since 21, we then started putting them into the nursery first for 1 year, then planting them into our structure the second year. So we now have planted up last year, for example. So in 23, they were in the nursery. 24, we planted them into the field with the tunnels. We planted Tempranillo, we planted Grenache, planted more Shiraz, more Merlot, more Gewurztraminer, a little bit of Floreal, a little bit of Albarino. And literally last week in the nursery, we just put 1,000 Albarino in. We put Viognier in and one of my favourite wines, Gavi, which is Cortez. So we've just put that in as well. So that'll get planted into the structure next year. So for me, I'm going to have 4 white wines, but some of them might not be good enough and so forth. But we'll see. The idea is that if I have 4 white wines for the future, we've got a nice offering to any bar, restaurant for the future to go, look, you've got a B58 wine there that covers your white selection. You've got a rosé that we'll have, and then you'll have two or three reds that we might have, because although they're together at the moment, the reds, I see for the future that we hopefully will be having a B58 Shiraz or a B58 Tempranillo or B58 Nebbiolo. Who knows? We will see.
Okay. So, and you're not... The problem you've got is that you're growing in quite different conditions to what the rest of the UK is growing in, because they're in polytunnels. And the way I think about it, and we were talking about this earlier, is that a polytunnel gives you a warmer climate, and that's fine, not a problem, warmer climate's great, but because we're so far north, not only do you have a warmer climate, you also have a longer day than would normally be associated. So you're growing Shiraz, and the flavor, when we tasted the Shiraz, it tasted similar, a little bit lighter, but similar to a northern Rhone Shiraz. So you're thinking about that sort of moderate climate zone, but you've also got a moderate climate zone with a very long day period as well. Whereas when you get to the northern Rhone, the days are shorter. They're, you know, shorter, half an hour a day shorter than you'd get in England or where you are in the New Forest. So you've got quite a different climate. And I suppose you can't just go, well, Bacchus, this clone of Bacchus works and this clone of Pinot Noir works in the UK. You're growing in a very different climate. You need to find the grape varieties that will work in your climate.
Yes, I think that's the key to it all, really. And we have what we call loggers in the tunnels that are logging the temperature, the humidity, so that we can map that as well for the future. So we're just starting that this year. It's something, one of these things where hindsight's a great thing, and I wished I'd done it when we started, but we're going to have them in there, and that'll log the temperature every half an hour, and we'll see what that does during a day through the summer to see, because what we can do is do what we call GDH, growing degree hours, and let's say that the optimum is 6 degrees, so as long as anything above 6 degrees, we'll count it to see where we are on a day, and then we can multiply that up to know. So for example, last year was quite a dull year in the UK. Whereas this year, hopefully, the weather's been pretty good so far, and hopefully that will continue through the year. And this will be the year this will be the summer that we've been missing since 22, for example. And it'll be really interesting to see if we get, as you say, it's about that temperature. How long does it stay in the tunnels until nighttime comes, and when it gets dark, well, how much does it drop by?
Yeah.
And we can monitor that more by having these sensors basically live in the tunnels, so that we can then log that throughout the year to understand actually that variety needs so many GDHs, and if we don't achieve that, we're not going to get it to be fully ripe. So there's lots of that we're looking at, and that's technology we have in the strawberries as well. So it's just adapting things across and using that to help us to determine if we're going to make it at the end of at the end of October, for example, that variety is going to make it or not. And that's going to be key to going forward, basically.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think next week we're going to talk a lot about the actual structure of the polytunnels and some of the feeding and things that you give it. But let's just talk about some of the wines that we try, because I tried quite a number of different wines.
Yes, sorry, earlier. Yeah. I bombarded you with 24 and 23.
No, it was good. It was really good. And I suppose I'll tell the listeners what I thought.
That's great. Yeah.
You've got your own opinions and stuff, but I want to be straight up and down with the listeners. So we tried the Gewurz, both oaked and unoaked.
Yes.
Unusual to see an oaked Gewurz, or a Gewurz that's been oaked with newish oak. Alsace puts Gewurz into a big oak barrel, but they're really old oak barrels, and they're really huge oak barrels where you're using barriques and new oak. And they tasted like Gewurz. It was just bulk standard, average, what you'd expect for a Gewurz.
Yeah.
The oaky one was a little bit unusual because I was getting cedar notes, and that didn't quite work for me. But I mean, I think some people would really like it.
Yeah, and don't forget, we've got some in tanks, so when we blend it together, that will probably even it all out. Yeah. So that's the reasoning behind a bit of oak and a bit of tank.
Yeah.
With that variety especially.
Yeah, you do an orange Bacchus, but not a normal Bacchus, but an orange Bacchus.
Yes.
Quite good. I thought that was very nice, really nice.
This is the first year we've done it.
Yep.
And it's a lot of learnings from our guy, Guillaume, who's helping me to make these wines. He's done it for a number of years. So I think we'd kept him in the skins for 16 days. He says maximum is 18 days that it should be. So we got to 16 in, and he thought it was good enough, so that's when we pressed it. And we've got some in that one barrel, a wooden barrel, and the rest is in metal, stainless steel.
Yeah. And the Givet, the back has had a nice aroma to it. You had the tannins from it, so nice. We tried a Cabernet Franc.
Yes.
And I thought the Cabernet Franc was very Loire-like. It had that graphene-type note to it. I thought it was quite nice. I'm a big Cabernet Franc.
That's why I only grow things that I like to drink myself.
So. Yeah. Merlot we tried. Wasn't too worried about the Merlot. The Shiraz was a bit of a surprise because I wasn't quite sure how ripe it would be.
Yep.
In a polytunnel. Are we talking South of France ripe? Are we talking Northern Rhone ripe? Are we talking Australian Barossa Valley ripe? I wasn't sure. I think the polytunnel seemed to, when I was tasting the wines, looking at the flavor profile, the tannin structure, the acidities, and I was thinking about where in France that you would get an equivalent style of wine.
Yep.
And I think we're somewhere between the Loire Valley and the Northern Rhone. I thought the Syrah was a little bit less ripe than I'd get maybe from a Cote Rôti or an Hermitage in the Northern Rhone.
Yeah.
But it was doable and it tasted pretty good. Don't get me wrong. But it wasn't certainly a South of France or an Australian Barossa Shiraz sort of level of ripeness coming through. So it seems to be that you're probably getting, 300-400 miles south in terms of your climate than maybe the south of France.
Yeah, comparable climate to...
Yeah, which I think is quite interesting because there's a load of great varieties that you can grow at that sort of climate range.
Yes.
And the other thing that you mentioned, which I think is quite important, is the yield. You said in your strawberries, you've gone from 4 tonnes to 15 to 20 tonnes?
Yeah, exactly. So tunnels have made a big difference that way. And it's doing the same for the vines as well, because no disease is getting in, no rain's getting in there to cause powdery mildew. So we're not getting any losses from any diseases that way. So that's showing you what the potential yield can be. So, for example, Gewurz Traminer, if that was outside... Not I would grow Gewurztraminer outside because it would be impossible. But 1.5 kilos is a normal yield outside. Gewurztraminer is delivering around 3 to 3.2 kilos every year.
Per acre or ton?
Per vine. Per vine. So there's roughly 3,500 vines per hectare. So multiply that by 3.2. You're a good... you're talking about a good 14 tonnes there.
14 tonnes, yes. So that's about 6 tonnes an acre?
Yes.
I'm weird because I use hectolitres per hectare.
I know.
And tonnes per acre are my two references. So you divide by 2.5, I think, to go from hectares to things.
Yeah,
so.
Sorry.
But that's still pretty good yield.
I've got my maths wrong there. I've times that by 4. It's times by 3, sorry. So, yeah, Gewurz is about 11. But the reds, we're aiming at about 4 kilos, and basically that's about 14, so yeah, per hectare. So yes, it's down at 10, anything from 10 to 14 tonnes a hectare, depending on the variety.
Yeah.
But that's what we're learning. We're learning all the time that there's an optimum amount to have on a plant,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we'll learn. And who knows, with the Tempranillo and Grenache, that this is its first big year this year, that we might go, maybe 3.5 kilos is enough, because it's a... As you said, you're surprised that the Grenache is here. So actually, probably that's taught me a lesson already to go, I might just tailor that one back to the 3 kilo mark to make sure it gets to fruition at the end.
Yeah, if you think about all the grape varieties, Grenache is the one that, of all the grape varieties you're growing, it's the one that needs the most warmth.
Yes, so that might be where giving less per vine might just make it get to and produce a good Grenache wine on its own. Who knows yet? Who knows?
Okay, yeah, Sandy, I think we'll wrap it up there. And next week, I want to get into the nitty-gritty of what's going on in those tunnels, because you're doing things quite different, and there's some really interesting things that you're doing, and you're just trialing different things. And I think it'll be fascinating for the listeners.
Brilliant, thank you.
Cheers very much.